I need to take a brief aside. How do you eat a soft-boiled egg? Oh, Gemma has her headphones in. How do you eat a soft-boiled egg?
I think you usually break it, like, over something.
I have this egg. You have to break it over something? It's like,
so it's like runny on the inside, right?
Yeah, and Gemma said that you're supposed to dip.
Oh, that's very British.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Ooh, that's some good noise.
Yolk.
Gonna have a lot of fun. Gonna hit a home run. In the littlest league possible. In the littlest league possible. Gonna make it.
Welcome back to Tater Tots for another week. I'm Tim.
I'm Duncan.
I'm Duncan. I don't know.
A spit take. Sorry. Hold on. Let me take a drink of water.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Welcome back to Tater Tots. I'm Tim.
Oh. Water in my mouth. God. I'm Duncan.
I'm Duncan. Wonderful.
I did a real one that time.
Working on our spit takes. Really hoping to have it going for the 2020 regular baseball season.
Oh, boy. Spit take season. That's a more fun name for this season of Tater Tots than Sad Season.
Spit take season. We're so surprised about two-way players. They're a surprising development in baseballs. They're not actually that surprising.
I would say they're relatively surprising considering the dearth of two-way players in baseball history.
I guess. It feels like a very archaic concept. We'll get into it. Of course, this episode will be about two-way players. But first, it's about our ongoing commitment to communism. It's the Comrades of Baseball segment.
And etc.
In a stunning commitment to the power of the state, the Los Angeles City Council has voted to insist that Major League Baseball name the Dodgers the 2017 and 2018, I think, World Series champions in the wake of all this cheating.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
Sometimes governments will do this, and I find it embarrassing.
It's so immature. Yeah. I don't know, it just strikes me as something that a baby might do.
That's pretty much of it. I think that, especially right now, when everybody's trying to make everything about Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
And especially in this case, people are trying to make everything, including sign-stealing scandals about Donald Trump, I think it demonstrates pretty much that we're grasping at straws and we need to figure out a new and more innovative way of dealing with this poison in our society.
So it seems the government, the federal government, city governments are always very willing to step in on baseball concerns for many reasons. Understandable. It's fun to legislate about baseball things. Why not? Mm. But almost every time the government gets involved in baseball, one of the reasons that it is embarrassing is because it seems to grapple with baseball on like level 1 out of 10, that the response to this is like, well, the only logical response is that you have to award the World Series to the Dodgers instead of something like, well, maybe we should investigate Major League Baseball's antitrust exemption or something like that.
Yeah, I think that drilling down to the bedrock of it is like every time this comes up, right? It's like the government is responsible for giving baseball kind of an unbridled amount of power in the market. And so every time it's especially when Congress is like, whoa, we need to bring people in on this cheating scandal because of the children. I don't know. I've already become very bitter about the cheating scandal and what it seems to reveal to me about our society and what we value.
538 but sports people came out with a take. And their take was can't be mad at the Dodgers because they're just playing 21st century baseball.
No.
Not the Dodgers, sorry, what? The Astros.
Oh.
Can't be mad at the Astros. No. They're just playing 21st century baseball. They're just using the tools at their disposal. A bad take, in my opinion.
Yeah, everyone's always had tools to use for, like, espionage. Mm-hmm. That's not...
No, according to me, you have to play by the rules.
I will say that I keep, like, coming back towards empathy for the quote-unquote victims of the situation. Because I think I saw, like, a news item last night on ESPN about... Because the Dodgers, I think, are starting to, like, break their silence. Like, the athletes and front office members are starting to, like, express how they actually feel about the whole thing. And I think it was Dave Roberts who pointed out that in that series, Clayton Kershaw took a lot of heat for whatever, like, not being able to perform in the postseason like he always does. And I think some of their other pitchers also took. And it's interesting to me what a fine line there is between doing a bad job and being the victim of cheating in this instance.
And sometimes perhaps this is a great opportunity to erase that line.
What do you mean?
It's a great opportunity to rid yourself of the legacy of having done a bad job.
Yeah, I hope that this makes people be kinder to Clayton Kershaw, because they've been historically very mean to him. I know that you have a kind of a unique approach to this, but objectively, I think he's one of the, you know, one of the 21st century, late 2010s, early 2020s athletes who... He's one of those guys, you know, who you're like, when's he going to win a championship?
Sure, he has a rap for being bad in the playoffs. Occasionally, he's been good in the playoffs, but as of last year, when he was again bad in the playoffs, it's become a little bit true that he's often bad in the playoffs. It's probably a small sample size issue.
Well, my thing is just that, like, a lot of that narrative, in retrospect, seems to have been built by the Astros very brazenly stealing his signs.
Well, I don't know, maybe. And, I mean, the Astros lost games as well. They didn't win the World Series this year. So who's to say?
I don't know, they mostly didn't lose to Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, but... Well, I got nothing to say. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe the Dodgers should be awarded the World Series retroactively. Can you imagine
really
how sad it would be if Major League Baseball did that?
Like, yes, very vividly. Like, this is why I tied in this thing that happened to the New Orleans Saints football team last year, because they had, like, a very tragic end to their season that was brought on by a mistake that was made by referees. It wasn't as, like, egregious or alarming as actual cheating, but it still put city officials in New Orleans in a position where they had to, like, litigate it.
Yeah.
And at that point, I can't imagine that there was a real, I mean, I don't know, maybe for a New Orleans Saints fan, you were hurt that badly by it, you would take what you can get. But for, like, the rest of the world to look at that and be like, this sports team won a championship in court.
Yeah.
Just, if it ever came to that.
Yeah, it's just the weirdest idea. You know, the significance of a championship has nothing to do with your name being written down. It's all about the moment, and the Astros cheated their way to that moment, and good for them.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying hard enough. Speaking of trying hard, there was a Hall of Fame election.
What about trying hard? Like, trying hard to be a good baseball player?
Yeah, it takes a lot of effort to get to the Hall of Fame.
When you said, speaking of trying hard, I thought you were going to, like, refer to someone who's, like, a quote-unquote try-hard, someone who's...
Derek Jeter. Big try-hard.
Derek Jeter's kind of a try-hard. He owns the Marlins for some reason.
Huge try-hard. Just, that guy needs to be the center of attention. I don't know. This is unfounded. I have really nothing against Derek Jeter, except for the fact that he's driving the Major League Baseball franchise into the ground.
I think it's kind of funny that he's doing that. Weirdly... Here's my perspective on this Hall of Fame election that Derek Jeter and Larry Walker both made the Hall of Fame. For some reason, even though Derek Jeter made the Hall of Fame by all but one vote, I barely remember that part.
The real story is
for this news event has been on Larry Walker, just because
clearly
it's
the
been
real
more
story
interesting.
Is Larry Walker. Yeah, every bit of it, because, like, that's the thing is that, you know, they're like umpteen takes about how Jeter was like snubbed. I saw this referred to as a snub because he didn't get on everybody's
Excuse
ballot.
Excuse me? It's a snub because he was not unanimous?
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
He was not unanimous. For the record, one vote. He only did not receive one single vote. I mean, gracious, he got the second highest percentage of Hall of Fame ballots of anyone in history.
And yet, snubbed. Clearly the real story is Larry Walker, who didn't even think he was going to get elected, which I feel sad about. Like, I was looking at his Twitter, the last tweet, I think the most recent tweet on Larry Walker's feed is him being like, I don't think I have the votes, but thanks for being a fan. He's the first Colorado Rocky to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I believe he's the first person to have ever worn a Rockies uniform to make the Hall of Fame.
That's correct.
That's wild.
It's completely overshadowed by the fact that on the occasion of his induction, he wore a SpongeBob square. Nobody cares about the Rockies anymore.
He's the first SpongeBob alumnus to make the Hall of Fame.
The first big SpongeHead.
The first... there's got to be a name for the SpongeBob Legion.
I think it's SpongeHeads.
SpongeHeads? Square Boys.
Square Boys.
Square fans. SpongeHead Square Bodies.
So Larry Walker, the first Rocky... obviously, he went in wearing the SpongeBob SquarePants.
He had a big old, like, Letterman jacket. Big jacket, but it was covered in SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah, and...
And he was interviewed in this when he made the Hall of Fame.
All of this overshadowed by the fact that Nolan Arenado, like so many Rockies, like Tater Tot, Troy Tulowitzki before him, has an axe to grind with the Colorado front office.
Yeah, so he was... supposedly on the trading block all offseason for some reason. He's the best player in the Rockies, and they're like, this is...
They recently gave him a lot of money, too.
Yeah, they extended him just last year, and they were like, well, now's a good time to trade him away. And after he seems to have come off the trade block, news came out about that. Nolan Arenado came out and said, I hate this franchise. They're not trying to win. They've never tried to win since I've been here. And I'm
Everybody-
mad.
Everybody hates that guy.
Jeff Breidich.
Every once in a while. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, so he and Troy Tulowitzki both kind of had a similar experience with Rockies management, it seems. You linked to a couple columns that both called for the firing of Rockies GM Jeff Breidich. And I would say, well, maybe that would be a good thing to do. If you cannot at least, like, check in with your superstar player, Nolan Arenado, and say, hey, how you doing? Maybe you're not doing a very good job being the boss of your team.
Yeah, and the fact that this has happened before is, like, very unsettling to me. And the reason that I put it in there was because I just started to notice it as I was reading through those emails. And it occurred to me that the Pirates are maybe not the only baseball team that has a dysfunctional front office.
Hey!
And that's interesting to me.
Congratulations.
Hey. Yeah, what do you know?
I mean, Astros. Come on.
That's a different kind of... That's a very high level of dysfunction.
That's a different... Yes, a different sort of dysfunction.
It's an overachieving dysfunction, whereas Pirates, Rockies... White Sox?
What's wrong with the White Sox?
I don't know.
How's Ben Sherrington settling in your opinion?
Who knows? They got new jerseys, but I don't think he had anything to do with that.
No, he probably dictated the new jerseys. That was his first action as GM.
He called up Nike. First things first.
First things first, let's bring back the script.
I love it.
Yeah, check out like the new... We'll link to it in the show notes. Check out the new Pirates jerseys. They look beautiful.
I don't like that they have numbers on the front, but I love that script, so whatever. Last in my notes, our notes, do you have anything else that you want to talk about before we talk about the Mets a little bit?
No.
The Mets have a new manager.
Congratulations to the Mets.
They're the first of the three teams who were taken down by this cheating scandal to hire somebody new. And it seems like they made, if not the right move, which, you know, that's up to...
Who's to say what the right move is, but it seems a popular move.
Yeah, the players seem to like it, which is good. It's nice for the Mets to have nice things. That's what I'm saying.
Well, we'll see how long it lasts before they break it. Oh, no, Luis Rojas got hand, foot, and mouth disease.
Luis Rojas is the Mets' new manager. Brody Van Wagen. That's not how you say it. I don't care. The Mets GM made sure to check in with all of the Mets' sort of key personnel to make sure that they liked him, mm-hmm. which is great. Yeah. I think that it's nice that the players got input in that.
I think that's the kind of behavior that perhaps a GM should do. Say, hey, star players, are you happy with the direction of the franchise?
Unlike yeah, I think
Jeff Breidich or yeah.
Especially if you're in a circumstance, you know, where maybe you didn't expect there to be quite so much turmoil
yeah.
this offseason.
Yeah, put your hands in the pot a little bit and just make sure that you steer the franchise through the rocky waters.
Rocky waters. Breidich.
I wish we were talking about the Rockies when I had said that. Metsy well, waters.
The Metsy waters. Don't drink that water. It's very metsy.
It gave me hand, foot, and mouth disease.
That's what happened to Luis Rojas.
Yeah.
He drank the Metsy water.
Yeah, all the Mets said, that seems like a good hire. He was apparently the runner-up to Carlos Beltran the first time around. So
yeah, he's been in the franchise for a minute. So it seems like everybody knows him. Everybody likes him.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
And one good thing is that one of the consequences of all of the major league managers being fired is that it left even fewer managers of color in the major leagues. So I'm glad... Yeah. that they replaced Latino manager with a Latino manager.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. And Go we're Mets. All happy about it. I don't know much about Luis Rojas. Hopefully he's not a huge jerk.
No, I don't either. I mean, it seems like he's truly been groomed by the franchise in some capacity. I like the Mets. I'm rooting for the Mets. They're a very likable franchise, in my opinion. LGM, let's go Mets. Is that a bobble ornament?
Yeah.
Cute. It doesn't have a face.
No. It's not Mr. Met, it's just a man with a baseball head.
It's like if the Mets took some of Mr. Met's DNA so that they could make like a faceless army of Mr. Met clones.
Yeah. Like a Star Wars clone trooper.
Like Star Wars clone trooper, but yeah, with Mr. Met.
With Mr. Met heads.
Okay, that's the comrades. Let's warm up the old tot stove.
All right. Tick, 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 tick.
Ooh, what about that noise?
That was very scary. I loved it.
Let me try it again. Too spooky?
I like the first one, that growl. Yeah, this okay. is no camp stove. This is an industrial-sized stove.
Right, this is a professional range. Dominican Winter League MVP Peter O'Brien got a non-roster invite to camp with Atlanta.
Our favorite tater tot, who we know lots about.
Yeah, the most coveted prize for winning the Dominican Winter League MVP, a non-roster invite.
Sad.
Sad. An update on last week's kind of dubious
top
stove
news.
Yeah. a week after the Des Moines Register initially reported that Taylor Davis would be leaving for the Orioles announced that they signed minor league catcher and Cubs organization cult hero Taylor Davis. They love Taylor Davis in Iowa, is what I learned this week. He's like a big fan. There are memes about him. Big fan favorite. There are memes about him because he's always like finding the camera and then looking dead into camera.
You must mean Illinois.
Nope, Iowa.
Why Iowa?
Because he's a minor leaguer.
Oh, gotcha.
So he played in Des Moines. The Des Moines Register.
Yes. I'm putting all these pieces together now, and I apologize for my idiocy.
I don't forgive you. Try harder.
Okay.
I obviously forgive you. yeah, we talked last week about some speculation that Taylor Davis would be leaving. That seemed to have been fueled by a tweet by a sports writer for the Des Moines Register, and now it's real.
You've done
Taylor
it.
Davis.
That was a good, some good detective work on your part. You didn't believe in yourself, but you should have.
That's the lesson that I'm going to take away from the Taylor Davis signing.
Yeah. And believe in Taylor Davis.
I do believe in Taylor Davis. I think he has a bright future.
Yeah, I think that he's going to hit one home run this year.
I bet he hits two.
I hope not.
Why?
Just want to make sure he stays a tater tot forever.
Very selfish.
Yeah.
Finally, in the tot stove this week, Rene Rivera re-signed with our beloved Mets on a minor league deal that includes an invitation to spring training and a guarantee of $1 million if he makes the majors. I think there's some other incentives involved. Hey Duncan,
yeah.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about Rene Rivera?
I don't know anything about Rene Rivera.
Oh, okay.
Here's some things about Rene Rivera. I went ahead and went on his baseball reference page to just check out his transaction log, and he has one of the longest that I've ever seen. He has been, he got drafted in 2001. Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
It's an incredibly long time ago. And the crazy thing is he's only 36 years old, because he was drafted at 17.
16, 17, yeah.
Out of Puerto Rico, and he's just been bouncing around ever since then. He's played part of 11 seasons with the major leagues, a lot of minor league time. One interesting thing about him, 5'8" catcher. Very love short, that. Even for, especially for a catcher, yeah?
I love a short king.
Oh, we love a short king.
We stand a short king.
Yeah, especially yeah. Rene Rivera. He's accumulated only 2 WAR across all of his time, across 11 major league seasons.
He's got to be like a pitcher whisperer or something.
I mean, I don't know. He's not spent that much time in the majors. I just think he's like almost good enough. But he's probably good at defense. That's true. Wait, I'm going to hold on.
There has to be something, because like there's no way that you have a transaction. Like there's no way that you get dropped and picked up that many times unless there's something that like some front office will be like, yeah, I want that. I can work
with
that. I
think you're absolutely right. I'm checking in on his framing stats now. Because I think that must be it. All right, framing. Yes, he's an excellent framer.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably actually gives him more value than is accounted for by his baseball reference statistics. And the only other thing I wanted to say about Rene Rivera is this is going to be his third tenure with the Metropolitans, which is a lot of times, in my opinion.
Yeah, he is kind of an extremely Metsy player. I don't know why I feel this way. When I think Rene Rivera, I do think Mets.
Because his name is Rene.
I just think it's an association at this point, probably because he's been on the Mets so many times.
Yeah, this is his third time with the Mets. But also, every Mets player is named Rene.
Yep. Rene Wright.
Yep.
Rene Alonso.
Yep.
Rene Strawberry.
Yeah. Rene DeGrom. Rene Syndergaard.
Yeah, some of my favorites. And yours.
That's an interesting joke. I don't know why I made it.
I find that lately a lot of my bits that I've been doing, in the capacity that I've been doing bits, has revolved around people having the same name as each other. Honestly, I find it a little bit frustrating. I'm trying to diversify.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Get more names involved. Well,
this is good. I think we're kind of powering through, which is good because we have to talk about 18 tater tots today.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big episode for us. This is the episode where we cover a relatively new phenomenon in Major League Baseball that seems kind of tailored to fit within our sort of podcast concept.
Why do you think that?
Because the two-way player is going to be a player that has some offensive capabilities, but necessarily kind of a limited offensive capability.
Mm.
Because I think that there is a limitation to how good if a hitter or a pitcher can be, Shohei Ohtani notwithstanding.
Isn't the point of a two-way player to break free of that mold, though?
Sure. But I do still think that, I don't know, how many home runs did Ohtani have in 17?
A lot. Like
15, 20 home runs?
Yeah.
I think you'll be hard-pressed to find very many players like that.
Well, yeah, hard-pressed to find as many players as a once-in-a-generation talent like Shohei Ohtani.
Well, I just mean, like, I think that this, well, I think that there's a particular type. We should just break it down, and then I will speak my piece on what I think the two-way player will become.
Okay.
First things first, we need to talk about what a two-way player is. Of course, there's been kind of a...
There's a common law definition of what a two-way player is.
Yeah, but it's becoming sort of more regulated as these players become more common.
Well, I think it would have been fine if Major League Baseball didn't want to institute some restrictions on pitchers for 2020.
What do you mean fine?
It wouldn't have made a difference on rosters. I don't think they would have needed to regulate it if not for these new rules. Baseball is going to institute a limit on the number of pitchers you can keep on your roster, which means that two-way players present kind of a special case.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, and I think it's an innovative solution to a problem that incorporates some things that are happening naturally, and takes advantage of the, you know, Ohtani phenomenon to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the solution, or the problem that it offers a solution to, is this problem of baseball games looking like real goof 'em up freak shows when you put position players on the mound and they just get clowned by professional baseball hitters.
Man, that was an interesting sentence, but I'm rolling with it. All right.
You don't like the sentence?
Well, I liked it. There was just a lot going on.
Well, I think that in recent years especially, managers have worked around, you know, the issues that they have using their bullpen by throwing a position player on the mound, and it kind of looks bad.
I just think it's a consequence of analytics. Like, so many of the changes in the game, like, there's a greater awareness of statistics and the relative improbability of winning or losing a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
And the definition of a blowout has changed as people have realized that, you know, like, a 5-run gap in the 9th inning is almost impossible to win, just as a 16-run gap in the 3rd is, you know?
So we have a new rule that is in effect unless a team is ahead or behind by 6 or more runs, or unless the game goes into extra innings, which says that you cannot put a position player on the mound, you can put a pitcher on the mound, and you can put a player who has a special designation of two-way player on the mound in this instance. Just to touch back at the beginning of it, before these rules are in place, there's maybe kind of a common sense understanding of what a two-way player is. Major League Baseball has gone out of its way to put a little bit more regulation on who can pitch and hit. No.
Right. They don't want people designating two-way players willy-nilly.
Yeah. So MLB says players who qualify as two-way players may appear as pitchers during a game without counting toward club's roster limitation for pitchers, which is unofficially 13.
Weirdly, they came out with these rules like...
Last year.
Yeah, like a long time ago, and they were saying, we're going to come out with the number of pitchers you have on the roster. And to my knowledge, we've never received information on this number. So I don't know. It feels like we have something wrong, but...
It's got to be coming.
Hopefully, or maybe they just forgot.
What are the odds that they forgot?
It is people. You always forget that every business is just people.
But, like... This is an important thing that's going to affect every major league roster.
Yeah, and like, they all forgot about it.
Sometimes, like, real people's jobs.
And yeah, oh, absolutely. definitely going to affect some loogies, right?
Yeah, Mark Szczepanski, for example.
Mark Szczepanski is going to have a problem.
A two-way player will qualify as a two-way player only if that player accrues both. One, at least 20 major league innings pitched, and two, at least 20 games started. That's an important distinction. As a positional player or designated hitter, with at least 3 plate appearances in each of those games, either in the current season or the prior season, or I think just for this year, it's this season or and. Like 2020, 2019, and 2018. Just so that makes the onboarding process a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. I believe I read that.
Okay.
So those players can be designated as two-way players, and once that designation is given to a player, it cannot be changed for the remainder of the season, including the postseason.
Which is fine, I think, right? I think a team would be happy to have as many two-way players on their roster as they wanted to.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to do that, and we'll get into that a little bit.
Right, but you need to have someone who can fill in the role and start 20 games as a position player, which most people cannot do.
Yeah, I mean, that offers a challenge. I honestly think it's a pretty well-balanced rule.
Yeah, it doesn't seem wrong to me.
No, it looks good.
I think that this will fully account for Shohei Ohtani, which is the entire point of the rule.
I read something about how he has to, like, re-qualify, but I can't remember how that's going to work exactly. I think he has to start as a pitcher. Like, he has to begin the season designated as a pitcher and not as a hitter.
Until he reaches 20 games started?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Because he didn't play last season.
Yeah.
Or he didn't pitch last season.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's got to start there, because if you're designated as a hitter, if you're designated as a position player, the word designated is very frustrating in this case because
of designated hitter.
Yeah.
As Shohei Ohtani loves to be.
If you are designated as a position player at the beginning of the season, then you cannot pitch. Period. End of story.
Yes. So that does sound right. I think he's going to have to be a pitcher to start, which shouldn't, I don't think that it's going to ruin the Angels roster or anything, because, you know, usually teams don't have more than 13 pitchers on their roster anyway.
Well, and also because he's capable of being a starting pitcher.
Right.
And getting those innings very quickly, and also designated hitting, and like he can perform in that role just as easily.
He will be a two-way player by June.
Yeah. The challenge is going to be with some of the other guys that we're going to talk about. But is there anything else that we needed to touch on before we get to our beloved tater tots? Anything else that you wanted to touch on?
No, I don't think so. So today we're going to be covering three baseball players who have a chance of hitting this designation next year, but who have, in the popular consciousness, broken out as potential two-way players.
I want to say three. Can we say three and a half so I can give a shout-out to A.J. Reed?
We can talk about A.J. Reed, and I apologize again. And this list does not include Shohei Ohtani, of course, who is not a tater tot. That guy loves to mash dingers.
Well, he didn't mash any last year, did he?
What?
Did he hit a lot of home runs last year?
I don't remember exactly how many he hit, but he must have hit plenty of home runs last year.
He wasn't a tater tot last year, which is why we aren't covering him.
Right, exactly.
But I don't actually know.
He's certainly made an impression on this episode, even though he's not one of our subjects.
100%. Last year he hit 18 home runs.
Yes, okay.
That's so many home runs.
That's what I thought. I was quite sure that he hit a good portion of dingers.
Yeah, but first things first, let's talk about other notable Angels two-way player, Jared Walsh.
The one that we've all heard of and we think about when we think of Angels two-way player.
When I say Angels two-way player, you say Jared Walsh.
You think Jared Walsh.
Let's watch this dinger. Click.
Clack.
Clonk.
Still looking for that first major league home run. 36 of them in the minors this year. Drives one out to center field. This could be it. Mercado back at the wall. Gone! Big fly is first of his big league career for Walsh. 6-2 Cleveland. And that's got to be a great feeling for Jared Walsh to get that first home run.
Good God.
Dang. I love this home run.
Yeah, he scoops it, and then he just... I love that he hits it off the tarp on top of the cameras.
Yeah. I want to say before we talk anything else about Jared Walsh and whatever, first things first, is that I love this home run because I love to go down for it. I love to
obstacles.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I thought the exact same thing. It's like one of the main advantages to playing baseball in like a major league baseball park is that there's... stuff. Yeah, there's stuff that you can hit.
Yeah, so this is an aesthetically stunning dinger. He scoops it out from below the strike zone, just womps it way deep into center field, and as we mentioned, hits the tarp on top of the center field cameras because they don't have like a regular batter's eye. They got a bunch of rocks out there. So they just, like, the cameras are just in a tent.
Sometimes if you hit a home run, it just goes over a fence. And while that's very satisfying, it can't be nearly as satisfying as hitting something. And Jared Walsh hits a tarp on some poles. Jared Walsh is the Angels' original two-way player. He was drafted in 2017. No, 2015, right? Ohtani was signed in 17. So Walsh was drafted 2 years beforehand in the 39th round from the University of Georgia. He had an exceptional senior season at Georgia. He led the SEC in opposing batting average with a 185. He placed third in ERA in the SEC with 2.6. And he set himself a career high for batting average of 306. Pretty good.
I got a question.
Yeah.
How come you think he was drafted so late? Why wasn't he more, hyped coming into the draft?
Because his career high for batting average was that season, and it was 306.
That's terrible.
Yeah, well, no, I think as we've discussed on the podcast, one thing about college baseball players is that in order to be recognized, they have to hit like 600.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
and then you're like, we'll give this guy $15 million.
I think that's one of the subjects that I want to touch on maybe after we've talked about the players, but the difference between college baseball and Major League Baseball is again made apparent by this phenomenon.
There's not a lot that's very interesting about Jared Walsh as a baseball player at this point. What is kind of interesting is the Angels at large. I don't know what it is about the Angels, but they've been doing this for a while. They in addition to Jared Walsh and, of course, Shohei Ohtani, the Angels have four other baseball players in their system with the potential to be two-way players. Those are Caleb Cowart, Bo Wei, William English, and the recently drafted Eric Rivera. I think that there's a player up that has just recently defected from Cuba who the Angels have their eye on as well.
Oh, really?
Who can do this?
They're going for it. I think that's fantastic. I mean, if they build a roster out of two-way players, what a fascinating team to watch. I mean, they're already one of the most interesting losing teams in baseball. Can you even imagine if they keep this up?
While losing?
Well, I just mean to say they have the two most interesting baseball players already, right? Yep. They're not interesting on their face just because they don't win a lot of baseball games, but if they continue to accumulate fascinating baseball players...
The sky's the limit.
The sky's the limit. I don't know. I just think it's cool.
It's definitely very cool. I mean, we're... We're against specialization, I think, on this podcast.
Yes, I would agree with that.
It's cool to see all-around athletes getting a shot to be all-around athletes.
It's always been my perspective. I mean, this started with football. When you tell me about football, I was like, why can't any of the players play offense and defense? And you said they used to back in the olden days, and then they decided that it's not worth it anymore.
I mean, it's still encouraged among kids for some reason.
Yeah.
Kids also
play two ways on the baseball field.
Yeah, it's probably, I don't know.
It's easier.
Right.
Just but as you get higher and higher levels, specialization gets more and more necessary.
Yeah.
But I think there's something very aesthetically pleasing about the idea of a well-rounded athlete. I just find it deeply satisfying.
With all that being said, this two-way player rule is going to make life very difficult for Jared Walsh. Because he, like Shohei Ohtani, is not yet qualified to be designated as a two-way player.
Right, but...
and he is primarily a relief pitcher.
I thought it was the opposite. I thought he was primarily a position player.
Well, he's primarily a position player.
Right, that makes it harder. If he was primarily a relief pitcher, that would be easier.
Well, his primary pitching position is relief pitcher, so not only is he like a kind of a... He's a bench player.
Yeah.
He's a bench bat and a kind
reliever.
Of a deep option in the bullpen.
Right.
So in order to get his 20 innings pitch and 20 games started with 3 plate appearances in each of those games is kind of a... I think it's a high hill.
Right, I guess you designate him as a pitcher.
Right.
And he's just one of your slots, and then hopefully he starts 20 games at first.
Or a designated hitter.
And also reaches 20 innings.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the silver linings of a player like Jared Walsh, of course, is that he can relieve. So you can start him, get him his 3 plate appearances, and then put him on the mound.
Right. I mean, that's one of the exciting things about two-way players is it opens a lot of strategic possibilities. Waxahachie swaps and the like. You can just have Shohei Ohtani and Jared Walsh switching off between first base and pitcher the entire time. Are they opposite-handed?
I think Shohei's a lefty.
Jared is a righty.
Is he?
Yeah.
No, he's a lefty.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Never mind. There would be no strategic advantage to that, but I would enjoy it.
He might be a switch hitter.
Shohei Ohtani has only played designated hitter in the major leagues, I think.
He might have played some outfield.
I think, to my knowledge, he's only played DH. In Japan, he was an outfielder and a very good one. But the Angels have decided to try to limit his injury risk by only playing him at designated hitter.
It's not a bad call.
No, but it does raise the floor for his hitting because, of course, you're more valuable as a good hitter the more demanding your defensive position is. and designated hitter is the least demanding defensive position by a pretty good margin.
Ohtani bats left but throws right.
Cool.
Jared Walsh, on the other hand.
Yes.
Bats left, throws left.
Perfect. Yeah. Swap them back and forth the entire game.
Got to do it.
I would. Oh, man. Do you think they'll do that at some point? Waxahachie swap those two? I'm sure Shohei Ohtani could manage first base.
I think that they will have to do that. I mean, just for the sake of television. I mean, they're the ones that are in the lab. They're out on the bleeding edge of this. And they continue to be one of my favorite baseball teams.
They have a little pipette, and they suck up a little bit of hitter DNA, a little bit of pitcher DNA. Drop them both in the same test tube, and it goes poof. And then, like, Shohei Ohtani bursts out. He breaks the beaker, and he's sitting there, like, naked, but fully grown. Just, and like, he's all wet.
Joe Maddon is, like, covered in soot, and his eyebrows have been singed. And he's like, interesting. And then he writes something down. I would like you to tell me about Brendan McKay, because I think that a lot of these guys are like conceptually very interesting, but will in all likelihood not produce a ton on the field. But Brendan McKay, boy howdy, what a baseball player.
He's an interesting cat. Well, let's watch his dinger.
Let's do it.
There's a long one down to right side. That ball has home run distance and then some. Wow. That's some power from McKay. McKay belting his first home run. How about that in a pinch hit roll? He rung the D-ring.
That has been a very popular ring in this series. Full count. Enjoy.
Man, he just whacked this.
I mean, what a wonderful dinger.
Yeah, this one even better. Also down in the zone, but not all the way down in the zone.
Not below the zone on this one.
Yeah, so the swing.
As it was for Jared Walsh.
The swing doesn't look so caveman-like and goofy. It looks like a really nice baseball swing.
Yeah.
And has the added advantage of being in an indoor stadium so that everything's going to hit off of everything. Mm. No matter where you hit it or where, it's going to hit like a catwalk or something stupid.
I mean, I would say that a lot of home runs in an indoor stadium merely go into the bleachers like a regular home run.
This one bounced off a catwalk.
Right. I mean, he just smashes this dinger so dang far.
Bang, bang, bang. Big bomb.
Hits it with incredible power, and then it goes a long distance. And that's makes it an aesthetically satisfying dinger.
Hit hard, go far.
That's my preference for dingers.
Yeah.
So, Brendan McKay was drafted in 2017, which was an interesting draft because there were two players that were going toward the very top of the draft, he and Hunter Green, who were both speculated about as two-way players, and there was a lot of discussion of this controversy. Some people saying this is going to provide so much value. Some people I remember saying, you know, if you were going to draft this guy as a hitter or a pitcher, he would be much lower in the ranks, and he's being overvalued because of his skills on both sides of the diamond. He's probably not going to end up being able to produce both of those, right? Like most players have not ended up being two-way players. And we'll see what happens for Brendan McKay and Hunter Green, right? Hunter Green came in to the team that he was drafted by, which I don't remember. I think he was drafted second overall.
I was going to ask if you knew.
The Royals, maybe? I don't remember. And he...
You Google Hunter Green and all of the results are about a shade of green.
That makes sense. I wonder if that's why he's named that.
What a frustrating name. Oh, he's green with an E. He's on the Reds.
The Reds?
Yeah.
Well, good. He has kind of had a tumultuous minor league career to this point. He only appeared as a pitcher in 2018, his first year in the minors, until he bled his UCL, he had Tommy John surgery. So his development is still in question, although I believe he was drafted only as a pitcher. Whereas Brendan McKay was drafted specifically as a two-way player, and he absolutely demolished the minor leagues. He played only like, he pitched 145 minor league innings before making the Rays on June 29th last year. But here is the problem with a player like Brendan McKay. He was obviously excellent in college on both sides, but he, in the minor leagues, was a very good pitcher and not very good at hitting. So it kind of brings up this interesting, like, algebra equation. Like, how much do you prioritize development versus playing in the major leagues? Because if he's going to be ready as a major league baseball player as a pitcher, but not ready as a hitter, do you give up on the hitting entirely? Do you leave him in the minor leagues a little bit longer, but not long enough to develop his full potential? Like, what do you do with that? It seems like the Rays have said, we are going to hope that he continues to develop at the major league level, but based on what we've seen so far, he has not been a competent hitter, neither in the minor leagues nor in the major leagues. So, you know, it's distinctly possible that he just ends up being a good baseball pitcher and not a hitter at all. But I think that's like one of the most interesting questions about developing two-way players that we didn't have with Shohei Ohtani, who kind of emerged fully formed.
Yeah, to me, yeah, I mean, this is clearly a unique challenge for baseball in 2020, which is funny because it does seem like a kind of a very archaic notion to just have a guy go out and play baseball all day without focusing on one, you know, development seems like it's the cutting edge, and focusing on like a hyper specialization. And so the idea that like this is challenging that and yet still seems to be coming from baseball's, it's very exciting.
It's cool.
To me, I feel like pitching is way harder than hitting, and hitting is something I don't know jack about developing a baseball player, but if I were the Rays, I would say get up there and pitch and we'll figure out hitting. You can be in the cage a bunch too, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, maybe. There was some speculation that I'm just remembering now from the Angels that they said maybe this two-way player designation will allow us to simultaneously use Shohei Ohtani in the majors and minors.
What?
I don't remember the specifics, but they said maybe because of this designation, we can use him as a pitcher, you know, once every 7 days and then send him back down to the minors to work on his hitting.
That seems wrong.
Right, because he's already a good hitter.
I mean, no, it just seems like...
It seems like a loophole that wouldn't be allowed.
Well, it seems like it seems like you're asking a lot of the player.
I mean, they're already asking so much of McKay and Ohtani. I mean, there were so many stories about this when Ohtani was first coming up. Just, you know, Major League Baseball players already put in a lot of work toward practice. And, you know, it's like almost twice the work to be working simultaneously as a pitcher and a hitter. It's
incredibly intense.
Yeah, but on top of
that, imagine doing all that work and then also commuting between wherever your Major League city and your AAA city are.
Yeah, it seems impossible. I wouldn't want that for anyone.
Find out where the Angels AAA team is. Presuming that he would even be Salt Lake. No, terrible idea.
No, it's far away. I mean, I think the... So both McKay and Ohtani are on a once-a-week pitching schedule, unlike every other Major League Baseball player. So as to, like, preserve their bodies. And, I mean, it's interesting. Like I speculated, I don't know if McKay is going to remain a hitter. It's possible they give up on the experiment. For the number of calls people have had to give up on one side of the experiment on Ohtani, you got to imagine that could be even louder for McKay, who's so far not demonstrated a lot of promise as a hitter in the majors.
The nearest farm team to Orange County, to Anaheim,
okay,
is the Inland Empire 66ers. Who are Class A advanced and who play in San Bernardino.
I think I got it backwards, actually. Of course, because Ohtani is recovering from Tommy John, so he would probably be in the majors to hit and then go down to the minors to rehab his pitching.
I mean, still, and like this goes back to my thing, which is that I think that pitching is way harder than hitting, and if you're trying to develop as a pitcher, I don't think you can very well do that at Class A advanced level. You know what I mean? And you also can't very well ask somebody to commute between Anaheim and Salt Lake.
Well, now I think it's more reasonable because, again, he only pitches once a week. So he spends most of the time with the major league team. He flies back once a week. Baseball players already fly more than once a week as it is.
That's a fair point. Well, I don't know. I hope that I just want this to catch on so badly. I'll take what I can get. I got some fun facts about Brendan McKay.
I want to hear them.
They're not even that fun because we're not talking about AJ Reed. Never mind. Brendan McKay has a terrible reign among college athletes. So I don't know. It's not that terrible. This award.
No, he's terrifying. And horrible.
Brendan McKay is a three-time John Olerud Two-Way Player of the Year award winner. He won the award three times in a row, which is the most that anyone's ever won it, and also the most times that anyone's ever won it in a row. The award's not that old.
This is an award for college players who are good at being two-way players. Two-way playing,
yeah. He also is one of two players to have won the John Olerud Award, in addition to, in the same season, winning both the Golden Spikes Award, which is presented by USA Baseball for Best Amateur Baseball Player, and I don't remember the name of that guy because I deleted the section. There's another
big college baseball award. Is it Dick Houser?
The Dick Houser Trophy, yeah. Is like the baseball Heisman that's given out by the College Baseball Writers Association. Sometimes players will win one or the other. Very rarely will a player win all three awards as best two-way player and also consensus best player among everyone who pays attention to college baseball.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable that Brendan McKay did this. Like, that's an incredible achievement.
Fellow Tater Tot AJ Reed also did it, but he doesn't pitch so much anymore. He got to the majors, I think, a little bit too early for the concept.
So this is, I mean, we can get into it now. This is what I was referring to with the way that the major leagues are so much harder than the minors. There are a lot of college baseball players who play on both sides of the diamond, so much so that they've instituted a award to award the best of them.
Yeah.
Right? And so it is relatively common, and a lot of them excel on both sides. And the fact that, this is kind of standard practice in college baseball, and there have only been like four major league baseball players ever to do it successfully, just speaks again to the difference in qualities between those levels in a pretty astonishing way.
Yeah, I think it kind of outlines the amount of preparation that's necessary to be sustainably good at anything.
Yeah.
At that level in this day and age, let alone, to be sustainably good at more than one, two very different skill sets.
Nearly impossible.
Nearly impossible. Shohei Ohtani, only maybe these other guys. It's yeah. It's a real wild card situation.
And let's be honest, even our good friend Shohei Ohtani has barely done this.
Yeah.
Like, the year that he pitched, he was hurt most of the time. He was mostly just a hitter that year, and then last year he had Tommy John, and he was entirely just a hitter. So yeah, that's even yet to be seen whether he can do this successfully.
It's going to be an exciting season. I think this is going to be the thing that at very least I'll say this is the thing to watch for this season.
Yeah, this could be one of the big storylines because Brendan McKay is going to start the team on the Rays this year.
Yeah, it's either going to be very exciting or very disappointing.
I mean, we'll see. Ohtani's not fully recovered from his Tommy John yet, so maybe we don't want to count our chickens.
Ah, dang, I love counting chickens.
Well, how many can you count?
As high as you'll let me, but only when they're hatched.
Oh. Well, that's actually very wise.
Should be okay, actually.
Yeah.
Make sure that they hatch first in Anaheim and in Tampa Bay and to a lesser extent in Cincinnati.
Where Michael Lorenzen plays baseball.
Our last Tater Tot of the season. No, that's not true. Our last Tater Tot of the episode.
Don't worry. Tater Tots will continue.
Yeah, next week. And Michael Lorenzen.
For several weeks after.
Yes. Lorenzen, less of a... I don't know how to like classify Michael Lorenzen in this episode because he's not like a pedigree two-way player,
but say that he is the most successful two-way player in the major leagues.
It's just a very exciting athlete. Let's watch a home run.
Well, the one thing he's not done so far this season is to go deep. I'd say he is due to take a nice easy walk around the bases.
High drive into left center by Michael Lorenzen. Yes, sir, it is. Goodbye, Michael Lorenzen.
Maybe Blake Parker didn't know he was a pitcher/position player.
Guy is just an unbelievable athlete. Unbelievable.
This is a home run by Michael Lorenzen in a game in which he did something that no one's ever done except for Babe Ruth, which is always impressive, even if it includes collecting a win statistic. Michael Lorenzen, as of this home run, is the first baseball player to earn a win, play in the field. Lorenzen played in center field and hit a home run since Babe Ruth did it in 1921 for the New York Yankees.
I think you can make the argument that Michael... I wouldn't make this argument, but I think you could make the argument that Michael Lorenzen is more impressive than Shohei Ohtani. For this reason.
One, I thought you were going to say more impressive than Babe Ruth, and I think he definitely is, but now I want to hear this argument.
Sure, I think Babe Ruth just sucked absolute eggs at baseball.
No good. That guy, bad body player.
That's true. If you were to line up Babe Ruth and Michael Lorenzen and say which one of these would be a better baseball player, I think you'd pick good body boy Michael Lorenzen, who's ripped to shreds. Yeah. Whereas Babe Ruth, notably fat.
He's never been ripped in his life. He remains intact. Why is ripped a good thing?
There's a lot of words surrounding weightlifting that are, I think, intentionally uncomfortable to say and consider.
Yeah, it's one of these things where good means bad. The word means the opposite of what it means.
Yeah, you're not really ripped. You've actually gained mass.
Your body is impeccably put together.
Anyway, Michael Lorenzen, unlike anyone else we've talked about, except for Babe Ruth, successfully pitches, successfully hits, and successfully plays the field.
I don't actually know that he did anything very impressive in this game, but I mean,
I don't think that he made a single play, but he did appear in the field, but he has demonstrated.
He's evidently a good defensive baseball player, yeah.
Not only does he play the field on occasion, he is a good defensive outfielder. Unlike Shohei Ohtani or Babe Ruth, Michael Lorenzen has become a reliever. I think he started at some points. I could be wrong about that. I feel like he was a starter at some point. So that, I think, makes it a little bit easier for him to work as a two-way player because it allows for a little bit more flexibility, like we were talking about with Jared Walsh kind of coming in, as he did in this game that we're talking about. He entered as a reliever and then finished off the game in center field.
He does this a fair bit.
Yeah. He started 21 games for the Reds in 2015. So in 2015, he was mostly used as a starter, and then after that, he was converted to a reliever.
Okay.
And that's good and fine.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, he's been a serviceable relief pitcher. Nothing special, but definitely good enough to stick in that role. He has also been at times a great hitter and at other times not that great a hitter, but also serviceable in that role. And obviously he has a ton of power and potential. People seem to think that if he focused on one or the other, maybe he could be a great pitcher. So maybe this two-way experiment is also bunk for him and he should have just specialized like everyone else.
I worry that this is going to be mostly bunk. I hope that it's not. I really hope that something good comes out of this.
Yeah.
Because I love the idea of baseball going back to... I keep, like, wanting to talk about this as baseball going back to its roots, and it's not really.
I mean, like, so originally, and I mean originally, back in the 1800s, there were a lot of two-way players. But, you know, post-Babe Ruth, and even pre-Babe Ruth, this phenomenon kind of died out. I linked to a Fangraphs article that has a table of everyone who has played substantial time at both pitcher and hitter, and it is quite barren. Like, it is, this phenomenon with Shohei Ohtani and Brendan McKay is really as unprecedented as we're making it seem. There's not a lot of players in Major League Baseball who have attempted this, let alone been successful. So, yeah, I mean, I you could take that as evidence that it's unlikely to work, just...
That it never has.
No one's ever made it work before. Even Babe Ruth didn't really make it work. Like, he did it for a couple seasons, and then he just became exclusively a hitter.
Yeah.
Sad.
What was the tagline for this season that we came up with at the beginning of the episode?
Spit take season.
Yeah. No, that doesn't...
No, it's sad season, and we all know it.
Doesn't... Try as we might to make it anything else, this is sad season. Sad baseball. You made a comment in the sheet that it's hard to appreciate Michael Lorenzen enough, so we won't.
Okay.
Okay.
All of this talk of all of these exciting two-way players just makes me... What's the opposite of nostalgic? Like when you revile the past? It makes me feel that way about how excited we used to get about players like Christian Betancourt, who in like 2015 the Padres said, we're going to use him out of the bullpen, and then he pitched like four innings and they DFA'd him immediately because he was terrible. You know, we're so... We have this... spoils these riches here, and it's great. It's something to appreciate in this modern era of baseball.
I'm trying to find the opposite of nostalgia.
I would be curious if there's a word that means when you hate the past.
This Quora entry, which poses the question, what is the opposite of nostalgia, takes opposite in a different meaning.
Okay.
And conceives of the opposite of nostalgia as either the anticipation of a coming future.
Yeah.
Or participation in the full possibility of the present.
Those are both great words that I would love to know if they had definitions for.
There are no words.
No words. This person didn't even come up with words.
But also, there's the very concept that's posed in this question is extremely different from the concept that you're presenting.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
I do.
You're like, I hate the past.
Yeah.
Which is... a sort of partial opposite
mm-hmm.
to loving the past, whereas this person says full opposite, love the
right.
future.
Love the future, yeah. Well, if you do have a word for the phenomenon that I'm describing, please email us at tatertotspot@gmail.com.
Make one up, and we'll read the best
sure.
one
yeah,
on the podcast.
If you could do like an etymology of it, like actually put together a word that means this, that'd be fun.
More people should make up words.
I think people make up a lot of words, honestly.
Yeah, I think that we should do it more. That's just my take.
All right. I guess he's I don't have strong feelings on that.
Okay. We're almost done with the episode. I got to give you a snake fact. The speed of a rattlesnake's tail vibration is the fastest sustained motion by any vertebrate, with some rattlesnakes of the species Crotalus polystictus exceeding 90 vibrations per second. Duncan, you make a note in the show notes that the runner-up to this fastest vibration is a hummingbird beating its wings. I'm surprised. I figured that the hummingbird would beat out the rattlesnake. That's going to be the subject of my next novel. And that's going to do it for us this week on Tater Tots. As always, you can donate to Baseball for All, which is an initiative that gets girls involved in youth baseball across the country. It's very important. And in less important news, you can follow us on Twitter at TaterTotsPod. You can like us on Facebook behind the Facebook URL/TaterTotsPod. And you can email us TaterTotsPod@gmail.com. Next week, we're talking about Anthony Alford, who has a very interesting story indeed. We will talk to you then.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye. And also from running too fast, you'd run out of gas. But that's not possible.